From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's going on, good people? It is time for Current Sports with me, Al Martin, here on WKAR AM 870. So glad you allow Current Sports to be a part of your afternoon. I'm excited. I hope you all are excited about today's show, because we got a great one in store for you. Well, I tell you what, today's a special, special day. When you talk about a Detroit sports icon who impacted not only the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan, but the entire nation, folks, Joe Louis. Yes, the great Joe Louis, a man who many of you know. If you don't know him, I'm sure you've heard his name before. He is a sporting icon. Joe Louis turns 100 years old today. How about that? The great Joe, of course, he passed away many years ago, but, you know, his impact on the sports world, not only in the realm of boxing, but in sporting culture, both in the ring and out of it, are still felt today. It's going to be a great show, because later on in today's hour, we'll be talking with Golden Glove great, who went on to do many great things. It's kind of a cool time, because he's done many great things, not only in the ring, but out of it as well, when it talks about many social and political movements. Elmo Hudson. Now, we actually had Elmo on last summer. He's a great guest and provided a lot of insight into the world of boxing and beyond. And he'll share his thoughts on Joe Louis. And we're encouraging all of you throughout this entire hour to call in and give your thoughts and memories on Joe Louis and how he impacted, again, not only sports, just in the ring, but out of it as well. He was such an iconic figure. I would love to hear from you from folks who actually got a chance to watch him fight or to listen to his fights, or even just recalling some of the distant memories that you can about the great Joe. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Definitely want to get your thoughts on that. Again, Elmo Hudson, he'll be joining us around the 140 mark. Today, we're going to try this again. Hopefully, we can get Mekhijah Reynolds. Mekhijah Reynolds, of course, now the former defensive lineman for the Michigan State football team. And we talked about him yesterday on Current Sports, because he was actually signed with the New Orleans Saints, the NFL's New Orleans Saints. There's a pretty cool story behind how that whole entire transaction transpired. So hopefully we can get Kaj on. We're in talks with him right now. And we'll talk some Tigers today, as the Tigers got a great win over Baltimore yesterday. And, you know, the win is kind of overshadowed by a certain moment when it comes to Torrey Hunter and Norris, the pitcher for the Baltimore Orioles. They got into it, and, you know, Torrey Hunter was hit with a 93-94 miles per hour pitch. Torrey didn't like it and starts jabbing his mouth a little bit. Torrey stayed in the game, but Norris got ejected. It was an interesting moment, a moment that, again, overshadowed the win for the Tigers. A great win nonetheless for him. But we'll talk about that and so much more. And did you see Donald Sterling sit down with Anderson Cooper of CNN? If you didn't, it was really, I went on yesterday's show and said that he's going to look like an idiot. He already did from some of the quotes that I had seen before that interview took place, and they showed it in its entirety last night. But, man, idiot is an understatement. My goodness, he had some strong, strong comments for Magic Johnson. Of course, the MSU great point guard here at MSU, and who went on to have a storied career with the Los Angeles Lakers. Sterling had some very strong comments about the iconic statue of Magic Johnson that he has everywhere, and he kind of criticized the things that he's done in culture and trying to uplift the African-American race and beyond. Just some really idiotic comments, if you heard it, I want to get your thoughts on that too, because it was just it really blew my mind, and Sterling just kind of dug himself another hole here. So, all right, again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll remind you all again that Current Sports TV tapes this Wednesday. That's right, tomorrow night, I'll be sitting down with Ron DeLeon. He is a boxing and MMA, mixed martial arts, fighting promoter, and he's done so much for the sport around here, and has really kind of, you know, put it to a relatively interesting component of stature here in the area. Popularity has continued to grow in Michigan when it comes to both boxing and MMA fighting, and Ron has a lot to do with it. I'll sit down with Ron to talk about that and the popularity of boxing and MMA, and also the brutality of the sport, and how many consider this a sport to just be too brutal at times. So we'll talk with Ron with that, and if you want to be a part of that live studio audience like we do each and every Wednesday night, here on the campus of Michigan State University. You can do so and go go to WKAR.org to sign up online for free. All right, without further ado, here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 13th, 2014. Again, today marks the birth of the Detroit sports icon. The late Joe Louis turns 100 years old. Joe Louis Barrow was born May 13th, 1914 in Lafayette, Alabama, and moved to Detroit about 10 years later with his family. Now, Louis competed in 70 fights, posted a record of 66-3. That is unbelievable. That's a flawless record, if you ask me. One of his bouts was considered a no contest. He earned 52 of his wins by knockout. Impressive nonetheless. He became a national hero, if you remember, back in 1937 when he defeated German Max Schmeling. The historic win in the fight of the century, as it was dubbed, was earned in the first round. It only lasted about 2 minutes and also marked the triumph over the Nazi propaganda that helped inflate Schmeling's image, by the hate organization as a model, of course, the whole Aryan supremacy that the Nazis preached all the time. Now, Louis passed away in 1981 at the age of 66, and he was reportedly buried with full military honors at Arlington National Cemetery. Now, his funeral, according to the Sunshine State News, was paid for in part by Schmeling, who had grown a close relationship to his former rival after they ended their boxing careers. Great stuff there. Again, we will be talking with Elmo Hudson, a Golden Glove great, has done many things in the sport, both in the ring and out of it, and knows firsthand about the impact that Joe Louis had on sports and culture. And we'll talk with Elmo around the 140 mark. Elmo has been on before. He's a great guy, a great guest. Looking forward to chatting with him about that. And again, we're encouraging you all to kind of call in and give your thoughts on the great Joe, on what he did for sports. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. All right, let's keep it moving. Michigan announced another football game time today. The number one homecoming game against Indiana will kick off at 3:30 p.m. for the University of Michigan. Now, the television network will be announced either 12 or 6 days before the start of that game. Now, Michigan's games are slowly filling in. This is the first guaranteed afternoon kickoff. The Wolverines will play at Notre Dame at 7:30 p.m. on September 6th on NBC, so mark your calendars for these, at Rutgers at 7 p.m. on October 4th on Big Ten, and will host Penn State at 7 p.m. on October 11th on ESPN or ESPN2. So the schedule is slowly filling up as far as those TV obligations are concerned. And Michigan State, they also announced two more game times today. The September 27th homecoming game against Wyoming will start at noon, and the October 18th game at Indiana will start at 3:30. Now, TV information for both games will be announced later. So mark those down for your calendars. Man, I tell you, we never stop talking about football, whether it be college or the NFL on this show. I tell you, it's always happening, folks. All right, and Caris LeVert, the Wolverines announced Monday night that LeVert is out 8 to 10 weeks after undergoing foot surgery. This is coming from Coach Beilein. He said in a statement, John Beilein, head coach of the Michigan men's basketball team, he said in a statement, quote, "Caris underwent surgery today for a stress fracture of his foot at the University of Michigan Hospital. He is doing well, and we expect him to make a full recovery in about 8 to 10 weeks. We are confident he will participate in our late summer training and play in our August trip to Europe," end quote. Again, that's from head coach John Beilein. Now, LeVert averaged 12.9 points, 4.3 rebounds, and 2.9 assists last season, and was really kind of a breakout player for the Maize and Blue. He had an unbelievable sophomore campaign. So, again, Caris LeVert out 8 to 10 weeks after undergoing foot surgery. And how about this? MSU big man and NBA hopeful Adrian Payne will not participate in the NBA draft combine while he recovers from a bout with mono, according to his agent, Mark Bartenstein. Now, Payne had planned on participating in the combine later this week, but now joins the likes of Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker, and Joel Embiid as notable absences. According to ESPN's Jeff Goodman, Payne is still on the combine list because he is still expected to attend meetings with various NBA teams. So again, it's not like the NFL draft where the combine is the end-all be-all to see what you can do on the gridiron or in the playing field. NBA is a little different. I mean, it's a different dynamic. Basketball in general is more of a kind of a finesse sport. They've seen what Payne can do, and it's not the end-all be-all if he does miss the combine. He's recovering again with a bout of mono, and he should be well soon. But now Adrian Payne, again, he will not participate in the NBA draft combine due to that. All right, and NCAA basketball icon Dick Vitale is close to fulfilling his promise to raise $250,000 for a pediatric cancer research grant through the V Foundation for Cancer Research in the honor of Lacey Holdsworth's name. Of course, Lacey Holdsworth, the young woman who sadly passed away due to a bout with cancer. She became so close with the MSU men's basketball team. We saw her at various games throughout the NCAA tournament. I got a chance to see her down at the Big Ten tourney out in Indy as MSU took that crown and then sadly passed away. The memorial was not too long ago, and, man, I could not hold back any tears during that time. It was so touching. But Vitale is set to host his annual fundraising gala on Friday in Sarcosta, Florida. Last year, he raised over $1.7 million and is hoping to top that this year. Wow, that's a lot of moolah. Now, he spoke this week of nearing his goal, saying, quote, "We can't save the girl with the angel smile, but we can try to save others in her name. We already have $175,000 raised, and I'm confident we'll get the rest at the gala." How about that? Great stuff, and I'm sure many of you out there listening were touched by Lacey's story and have donated and tried to help out this great, great cause. Dick Vitale, this is really, really great stuff, and I definitely tip my hat to him. Again, he's close to fulfilling that promise to raise $250,000, and I have no doubt in my mind that that will equal that or be eclipsed this weekend in Florida for Dick Vitale's great initiative. All right, and Tigers, Detroit Tigers, folks, they were in action yesterday, and Rick Porcello's six strong innings guided the Tigers to a 4-1 victory over the Baltimore Orioles. But the fireworks didn't really start again until the eighth inning, after Ian Kinsler's two-run shot gave the Tigers a three-run lead. Orioles pitcher Bud Norris delivered a fastball to Torii Hunter's ribs. Hunter took exception, and the benches cleared really quickly as Hunter and Norris exchanged words. And I'm a pretty good lip reader. I kind of, you know, if you go back at that video and see what Hunter had to say, it was naughty, naughty, naughty boy, Hunter. But hey, he was in the moment. Now, Norris was ejected, and the Tiger bullpen closed the door for the win. The clubs resume the three-game series tonight at 7:05. We'll talk about last night's win for the Tigers and that moment where, again, the benches did clear after that shot to the rib from Bud Norris to Torii Hunter. It was interesting, folks. Pretty interesting moment. And how about this? Love is in the air for the Detroit Pistons. I felt like not too long ago we were talking about, of course, Brandon Jennings finding love with his longtime girlfriend, I think now fiance. And now Pistons guard Rodney Stuckey is engaged to a former Pistons dancer and The Bachelor contestant Cassandra Ferguson. How about that? Now, Ferguson Instagrammed a photo of her engagement ring. It's a really nice ring, worth a lot of money, I'm sure, on Sunday. And it is also reported that Ferguson and Stuckey have a toddler son named Trey. So congrats to Rodney Stuckey. You know, it's not often I have some good thoughts about Rodney Stuckey, but this is great. This is great, Stuckey. I'm mostly talking about his on-the-court play, okay? But congratulations to Rodney Stuckey. You the man. All right, on Monday, Russia routed the United States 6-1 for its third straight victory at the Ice Hockey World Championships. Former MSU Spartan and current Detroit Red Wing Justin Abdelkader tackled on the goal for the Team USA, and he is also the team's captain. Now, Russia leads Group G with 9 points from three games, while the U.S. has six. And again, how about this stuff? We want you to call in. I want to get your thoughts on this for anybody that saw this CNN sit down with Anderson Cooper and Donald Sterling. Last night at 8 p.m., Donald Sterling made his first public appearance on CNN with Anderson Cooper after his racist comments reported by TMZ. Now, in the interview, Sterling abuses Magic Johnson and notes that he should be disgraced for having HIV. How dumb does he sound? This is just one quote from that interview. Quote, "I think Johnson should be ashamed of himself. I think he should go into the background. But what does he do for black people? He doesn't do anything." He continued to go on and say, folks, quote, "He got AIDS. What has he done? Big Magic Johnson, what has he done? What kind of a guy goes to every city, has sex with every girl, then catches HIV? Is that someone we want to respect and tell our kids about? I think he should be ashamed of himself," end quote. Again, that's straight from the lips of Donald Sterling during his sit-down with CNN's Anderson Cooper last night at 8 p.m. I could not believe the words that I heard from Donald Sterling, especially when you, those comments, those direct comments to Magic Johnson. Again, I think he made himself look like a complete idiot, a complete buffoon. Magic Johnson has done various things, from charity events to raise awareness about the AIDS epidemic to you know, countless renovations to many charitable endeavors throughout his entire career. And I just think this sounds like a bitter old man trying to save face, but doing it in really the wrong way. That's my opinion on it. Want to get yours? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Those are your quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, again, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, it is Tuesday, gents. Matt, Alex, how you guys doing? I'm blessed, man. Can't complain. Alex, how you doing?
Trying to dissect this, these Sterling comments, man.
Yeah, let's
I watched it over and over again.
So you did sit down and watch it.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched the highlights. I watched it live a little bit. And, yeah, it's interesting. It's so hard to dissect because it's like he's not even speaking English at times.
It's ridiculous.
Maybe he has dementia. I don't know. But not that that's an excuse, but this guy's got a lot of issues going on.
He does. You know, when I sat down and saw it, now again, I didn't sit down and watch the entire interview. I think what was it, an hour long last night. I caught a few snippets from it. I was switching back and forth. 24 was on last night, so I was switching back and forth from that and Anderson Cooper, the sit down with Donald Sterling. And you know what? You know, most people in instances like this, in a controversial situation such as Donald Sterling's, most do interviews and national appearances like this to try and save face, to try to change what looked to be very, very, something very, very bad, and to try to backtrack and apologize and to try to save face. But Sterling did the opposite, the exact opposite, this entire interview, and made himself look worse. He just added fuel to the fire, if you ask me, guys, and I could not believe what I was hearing. Now, we talked about this yesterday, and I heard a few excerpts, if you will, from that interview. Even read a quote when he talked about V. Stiviano, and he says, "Why did you make me say these things?" Like V had, you know, a gun to his head and said, "Hey, say this on this recorder. I'm about to exploit this." That really blew my mind. But the comments about Magic Johnson and exactly what I read here, that blew my mind. I'm just sitting here like, this guy, he's an idiot, complete idiot. I don't know what he was trying to do, Matt.
Yeah, you know, you thought he would try and save face. Nope, he doubled down and really entrenched himself even further in the views that he already had. And really, I think if I had to sum him up in one word, I don't even know if racist would be it. Mm. I think delusional would be it.
He seemed very delusional.
It's like he's on a different planet. I mean, he just doesn't see things through the same prisms that everyone else in the world seems to see things. Mm-hmm. You know, saying things about Magic Johnson, saying things like, "My players love me."
Right.
When they were ready to walk off the court and boycott your ownership of the team, mm-hmm. It just seems like he's living in a fantasy land.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you know, there was another moment in that interview where, you know, Anderson's reeling off questions to him. And Donald's like, "What are you talking about? I'm not a racist. You're a racist." Like, it's kind of just playing the blame game.
Just lashing out.
Lashing out on everybody, anybody in his view.
"You, Mr. Interview Guy, are the racist."
Right, that's exactly
what he
said.
"Why are you making me say these things?"
Right, exactly. Like, makes no sense at all. And like you said, I think, it's funny, in my notes here, I had delusional written down as one of my bullet points. He seemed completely delusional. Maybe he does, like you said, Alex, maybe he does have dementia, and he just seems like a bitter old man. And it really just blows my mind, though, watching that interview, and this is a guy who is the owner of an NBA franchise, a franchise, again, that's about 80% African-American, and he comes out and makes these comments, and just sitting there listening to him, and the way he talked, and the way he, you know, issued his dialect, it just seemed like a man who just doesn't know what he's talking about. And it amazes me that a man like him could reign in the NBA as an owner for as long as he did. And we always go back to it. I don't know how Donald Sterling survived as an NBA owner all of these years, and it really does, in a way, it makes the NBA look very, very bad. And I think Adam Silver has a little cleanup work to do, and he's doing a good job at kind of resurfacing that image again.
Yeah, it's tough. And the one comment that I found interesting aside from just the dementia and the delusional Donald Sterling, was when he said, Magic called me and talked to me about, you know, we'll set it all over, I'll take care of it. He made one comment about Magic Johnson, I don't know if you two heard it, that went along the lines of Magic reaching out to Sterling about his quote-unquote girlfriend and about how he's going to clear everything up. Do you remember that part?
No,
of the
I don't remember that. So you said Magic Johnson called him?
Apparently Magic
called Johnson. Are these before the racist comments?
Before the racist comments.
Okay.
When apparently what Sterling was saying was Magic called him, was saying that he would take care of I guess that Magic knew he had a tape of some sort and that he'd take care of it. And then he started saying, Sterling, that Magic was the guy that really put the tape out.
Really?
So for me, there's obviously a little bit more to this story than what we already know. But regardless, if I'm Magic Johnson, regardless if it's true or false, Sterling set Magic up for, I mean, Sterling set himself up for failure. Regardless if Magic Johnson did anything wrong or did anything illegal, Magic and Flout just deny even calling Sterling because you could just say he's delusional.
Yeah.
So regardless if Magic did contact Sterling before the tape came out, before the accusations of the girlfriend, Sterling set himself up. Magic can just give a wave and say, you're delusional, man. I've never talked to you in my life.
That's crazy. I didn't hear that part. I'm curious to see how that investigation ensues and if he did contact Sterling before the tape came out. I didn't hear that part of the interview, but it just really seems though, you know, throughout that interview that, you know, Donald Sterling is caught red-handed. You know, he goes on national TV and you know, I think he had a mentality is, you know, if he's going to go down, he's going to drag somebody down with him. You know, that was his goal, I think, of last night.
Yeah, he's not going quietly.
He's not going quietly at all, and Magic Johnson clearly became the target of that. And I think that, you know, like you said, a lot of people who saw that interview last night probably have feel the same way as us. I mean, Twitter and my Facebook blew up, you know, from various people I talked to about it and leaving comments on their statuses and whatnot. And it just seems as though Donald Sterling is just, like you said, he's caught red-handed, and he's a guy who just is bitter about a lot of things right now, a lot of things. And even his wife, you know, they were married for, 60 years, and she said she hates him now, and the guy has no love at all from anyone right now, and he's starting to realize his life is kind of crumbling right now, and if he's going to go down, I'm going to try to drag somebody with him, and Magic Johnson became that target, I think, guys. So
yeah, this just seems like a problem that he can't throw money at.
Oh, no, not at all.
You know,
right.
I mean, he's made his own bed here, and now he has to lie in it. I guess one last question for me is if, let's say, he does have dementia, and he's developed it over the last few years, why on earth is he still running the Clippers?
Right.
You know why? I understand that, like,
yeah,
you know, the family dynamics there are obviously odd, to say the least. But why wouldn't the family or someone from the Clippers organization kind of take steps to lessen his role and almost, like, fade him out? If you know he is kind of losing his touch mentally, why wouldn't you take steps to kind of, you know, try and avoid something like this, try and just alleviate his presence from the organization? Because, I mean, even before the dementia or, you know, possible dementia, the guy was a ticking time bomb. You knew something was going to happen. And I guess as he got older, I feel like that danger just kind of increased. Why wouldn't they take some proactive steps here?
My thought is the reason for that is just because he has fear of getting older. And when you're getting older and you're owning something, if you have a company and you're told, hey, man, you're too old for this now, who's going to want to step down? I mean, I understand it. If you're older and you're asked to step down and saying, You're not with it anymore, man. You're not keeping up with what's going on today. I can understand you're not going to want to give something up, especially something that, like, owning an NBA team.
Only thing he has to live for, huh?
I can understand him not wanting to give it up,
right,
but
right.
I can't understand other people being like, yeah, that's okay. You're good.
And I guess
he's just a, you know, total slime ball control freak, but it just seems like, what?
And that's a fair question too. And I'm curious because I'm pretty sure possibly just at least one person that is around him has to say, okay, maybe we should think about him having a lesser role. But you know, when Sterling's the majority owner and he's the one that has all the money and he's the majority owner, it's kind of hard to force him out because what can you do if he owns everything?
It's his way or the highway, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Which is unfortunate, but now you know things have come to light and now we're faced with this situation.
So should we make an early pick'em? Who will own the Clippers next? Who will be?
That's a pick'em in itself. You got Oprah. You got Floyd Mayweather. It's so many people out there trying to get this team.
You have Diddy's expressed interest.
Oh, P. Diddy has expressed interest, right? Well, he's Puff Daddy now.
Does he have the money?
He's going back to Puff Daddy. Yeah.
Does he have the money to do that?
Yeah. Diddy is actually, I saw the Forbes list for richest hip-hop moguls right now, and Diddy was number two now behind Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre just signed a crazy
Beats deal.
Yeah, the Beats deal, which made him the first billionaire in hip hop. That's unbelievable.
I think that's the kind of money you're going to need. Because that Clippers sale is going to be massive.
It is.
That is not going to be a cheap acquisition. I mean,
yeah, not a drop in a bucket, to say the least.
Who just got bought? Like the Kings for like $500 million? I mean,
wow,
the Clippers are going to be over $1 billion, I think.
Right.
That market, the players on the team, mm-hmm. it's going to be huge. I mean, it's going to be a large chunk of money. That's why I got to put my money on Oprah.
Oprah, I can see that. Oprah can do anything. She runs the world, man.
One other last aspect. I know we've been kind of rambling on this for a good amount of time.
One final thought.
If you were Floyd Mayweather Puff Daddy or Mayweather or your Magic or your Oprah,
yeah,
and you're seeing this team, obviously it's probably going to go for $1 billion, like Matt said. Is that a good investment? Would you invest in a team like that?
I think it is. You know, Los Angeles Clippers, they're a team that's on the up and up now. I mean, they have the personnel now.
But what's the ceiling for this team? I mean, you still have another team in the same city.
Yeah, you do.
So it's not like you can max out like.
Well, looking at the potential of this team right now.
In the same arena, too.
Yeah, in the same arena. I think right now the Clippers are obviously better than the Lakers right now. They're a team that they are still competing for a championship as we speak in the NBA playoffs. And you got all these players that really have bought in to a great coach like Doc Rivers, and each and every year it seems as though this team gets better and better. You're in LA, you're in a city where fans are coming out and starting to see you. Now, I remember Clippers games back in the day, you couldn't get one or two to fill the seats now.
Yeah, but
Lakers games dominated that. Mm-hmm. Now the Clippers are like even keel with the Lakers every game. The potential is definitely there, and I think it's a very good investment, without a doubt.
Yeah, plus you have two of the most marketable players in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Paul and Blake Griffin.
Right, Blake's everywhere.
You can watch an NBA game and not see a commercial without either of those two. I mean, they're everywhere. You have these two huge stars, the biggest market. I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer. Even though it's a huge price,
I think
I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, that's the thing is I agree that it seems very very profitable and very very luxurious to entertain the offer of buying them. But when you think about if you weigh the price compared to the typical Clippers years, I mean, there's a reason why it was sold for $12 million back 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, but
there's a reason for that.
I think that time is gone now.
Right.
The past.
And you have to also factor in that the reason the Clippers were valued so low is because Donald Sterling was their owner.
No one wanted
to go there. So now you have that kind of lifted. Maybe things open up. Maybe they become the Lakers
Absolutely.
For the next decade.
They could. But they still haven't won anything yet. And that's what concerns me.
Looking at, I think the big word here is the P word, potential. Right now, this team has the potential to become one of those story franchises in the league. And you got a lot, like you said, you got players on there who are buying in right now. You're winning games. Your attendance is through the roof.
And
I want to say this too. Even though this Donald Sterling situation has hit the fan, it has brought a lot of attention to this organization. I mean, 5, 10, 15 years ago, nobody even probably knew who the Clippers were. Now with the situation, whether you like it or not, in the circumstances that it's presently in, everybody knows about the Clippers now. My grandma didn't know who the Los Angeles Clippers were before this incident. I mean, the spotlight is on this franchise now, whether it be in a negative or positive light. I think it's a combination of both in that regard. But the team is good. The potential for this team to be great is there. And I think it's a very good investment.
Sure, but also keep in mind that it's not like this team has never had decent players. We can go back 10 years ago with Davis and McGetty and Brand and
Alcondi. Not like this. This team is way better than those teams back then.
This is
the best Clippers team I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
And that's true. But at the same time, it's not like they haven't seen any wins before in L.A. when it comes to the Clippers.
Well, I think the risk to buy this team and those concerns that you have are outweighed tremendously by the potential that this team has, without a doubt.
Fair.
Plus, you have to take into account that the Lakers are absolutely at the lowest point
they've
been at in the last 20 years.
Right.
If you're going to buy the Clippers, now would be the time.
Now is the time.
Granted, the Lakers have a high draft pick, but Kobe Bryant is not getting any younger.
Nope.
They could become the second fiddle team in L.A. If you're going to buy a team that has the potential to be the biggest event in Los Angeles.
Right. The Lakers got a long way to go.
Bye, 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 right now. Oh, yeah.
They got a long way to go, man.
And, you know, their ownership now is kind of has a lot of question marks with Jimmy Buss. So I think now would be the time to buy if you are looking to move on the Clippers.
High ticket. There's a reason why Oprah is thinking about buying this team. All right, guys. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit of Tigers. The Tigers had an interesting game with the Baltimore Orioles last night. And a certain eighth inning kind of scuffle ensued. Well, it wasn't a scuffle. It was just a kind of a jawing match, if you will. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, my day just got a little brighter. Folks. Everybody who knows me knows that I am a huge red, white, and blue Pistons fan. And breaking news here from Yahoo Sports. Yahoo Sports is reporting that the Pistons have offered Stan Van Gundy a lucrative deal to coach and run the Detroit Pistons basketball operations. Wow. I really hope Stan Van says yes. Stan is a man, that all rhymes. Stan is a man who has done a great job in his entire NBA tenure. I think he is one of the most underrated coaches and basketball minds in the game. You know, now I always hear him. He's always on Dan Lebertard. I don't know if you got to listen to Dan Lebertard at all, but Dan Lebertard has a radio show on SiriusXM I listen to every day. Stan is a great mind. He's a regular guest on there and knows his hoops. And this is just all around kind of a savvy, witty guy. I think this would be a great move. I think this is an outstanding move for the Pistons if Stan takes the offer. But this is very positive. I'm glad the Pistons are trying to make something happen here. Matt, what are your thoughts on it?
I love it, and I would love it if he came to the Pistons because they need someone like him who is kind of a veteran presence who would command the respect of his players. I mean, he took the Magic to the NBA Finals in 2009. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has experience working with headaches, sure, and also immensely talented centers.
Right.
So I think if you're Andre Drummond, it's almost a perfect fit because Dwight Howard was never better than he was in Orlando. Under Stan Van Gundy. So you have a guy who is going to maybe be able to maximize his talent. He's obviously a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. I'm almost surprised that he's been out of a job for this long.
I am. That's why I say he's so underrated because, I mean, his entire coaching tenure, and if you look at his track record is great.
Yeah.
I love his personality. He knows how to get players to buy in. And I'm shocked that, I'm not sure if it's a personal thing for him or if teams just not come out and interview him. I don't know what it is, but I'm glad the Pistons are waking up here and trying to make something happen in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest thing would be, obviously he's been waiting this long for the right opportunity.
Right.
If he waits a little longer, I mean, there's some good jobs out there in the NBA right now.
There are.
If the Warriors came calling, would you really blame him for going there instead of Detroit?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Alex?
Yeah, my favorite part about this is the hybrid role. We just discussed it a little bit during the break. He's the potential coach and director of operations. I'm looking at some of the other front office ranks, guys who are GMs of the other teams. If you look at the Spurs, Greg Popovich is also a director of operations and a coach. Looking at other players, looking at some other coaches, there are Doc Rivers from the Clippers. As much as the Sterling allegations are going on, he's still having a huge role in being the director of operations. I mean, there are a lot of really successful coaches who also direct a little bit. And that's the common trend. And I also researched a little study that showed that NBA teams are recently going towards non-typical general managers. Now, what does that mean? Guys that have never played in the NBA, guys that don't have any playing experience, guys that don't have any coaching experience. Mm-hmm. 14 teams. I mean, look at what the Nets did when they brought over that guy.
The kid?
Yeah, not even kid. The foreign owner, the guy who was running the GM.
Not sure, I can't think
Prokhorov.
Of him right now.
Prokhorov.
When
they brought over Prokhorov.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a perfect example. And it shows that this fits the mold perfectly. Most, if you compare the non-typical general managers like Prokhorov, like some of the other guys that have never played in the league, that are pure businessmen, the most success comes from guys who have played or have coached. And if you look at the top 10, you look at the better teams right now, most of those general managers or director of operations have played in the league before.
Yeah.
So for me, that's a good sign. It's an upward trend. I like that they're not going for a non-typical director of operations or general manager. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm excited for it too, and I'll only be excited though. I'm not going to, you know, flip my wig right now because, again, they just offered him a deal. Whether he's taking it or not, that's another story. And like you said, man, I mean, there's other sexy, if you will, sexy NBA jobs out there right now that have opened up. And I wouldn't be surprised if Stan respectfully declined the offer and went somewhere else. Stan, please, are you listening, Stan? Stan, please come to Detroit. The Pistons desperately need your help. So, again, that just broke. Again, if you haven't heard, Yahoo Sports is reporting that the Pistons have offered a lucrative, I wonder how much that lucrative means. A lucrative deal to come and coach and become the head guy when it comes to all basketball operations concerning the franchise of the Pistons. So we'll see how that ensues, guys. All right, before we go to Elmo Hudson, guys, I want to ask you all. Well, let's kind of dive into the last night's Tigers games. The Tigers, of course, took on Baltimore. Interesting game. Great game for the Tigers as they continue to have an extraordinary start to this year's season. Miguel Cabrera, again, getting the party started. How about him? Got the first hit of the night with a single that drove in Ian Kinsler, who was also great that night. Victor Martinez followed with a double. Cabrera came home after a sac fly center to Austin Jackson. A great start to the game, and they really kind of off-jump attacked Baltimore from the very start. Now, Cabrera loves Baltimore. He loves playing the Orioles, folks. Cabrera has at least one base hit in 10 straight games and 24 of the last 25 games. That's certainly impressive. He entered the game, get this, hitting .395 with 17 homers, 10 doubles, and one triple, and 47 RBIs in 48 career games against Baltimore. And how about this? Victor Martinez, too, he's continually been a kind of a shining star for the Tigers. And a moment of positivity for me, because there was always doubt in my mind on whether or not, you know, because Prince Fielder, we all know, I mean, how he struggles in the postseason, but you know, Prince Fielder played relatively decent in being that second guy to come off, you know, after Miguel Cabrera would take the plate. V-Mart is now stepping into that role, fitting in nicely as the man after Miggy. The double in the fifth inning gave him at least one hit in 22 of his last 25 games. He has at least one hit in 28 of the 34 games he has played, and he's hitting right now .348. Impressive stuff from V-Mart. Rick Porcello, starting pitching, we talk about, he was solid. He was solid all day. Five hits, one earned run over six innings. He improved to 6-1. And how about Ian Kinsler going 2-for-3? Of course, he hit that homer, and then two pitches later, the Hunter scuffles ensues. But the Tigers had a great game last night. I had no quarrels in any regard, other than a few defensive errors here and there for the Tigers last night. I thought it was a solid game for him overall.
Absolutely. And I think one of the biggest things for the Tigers is Rick Porcello.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of becoming a reliable starter. We kind of have waded through a few years of him kind of feeling his way through the majors, getting his feet wet. Now it kind of looks like he is a reliable starter. And having four guys in the lineup, or in the pitching rotation rather, who you can count on to give you quality starts, that's huge. Right. And I think if he kind of finds his footings and becomes the player that they thought he was when they drafted him, they're sitting pretty, because if you have your fourth starter with a 3.22 ERA and he's 6-1, I mean, you're in a good position to succeed overall. And as far as the eighth inning goes, is there anything better than watching the bullpen run out on the field,
yeah,
run the entire outfield so they can get to the infield and do nothing?
Nothing at all.
Weren't we talking about trying to speed up baseball and how they were worried that instant replay was going to slow down the game? And we have this happening.
It was already a 35-minute delay to start the game.
It's just insane. It's hilarious. I really like it, just because they get out there and, I mean,
they're
puffing out their chests and, you know, pick their noses and that's it. I mean, nothing happened. It's not like anything got crazy. But it's just funny watching the benches clear and then all of a sudden you see guys trickle out of the infield from the bullpen, and it's just
hilarious.
Yeah, they
just kind of stare each other, pointing little fingers here and there, and that was about
right.
it.
Hold me back. So, hold me back.
Hold me back,
don't
man.
Me fight.
I know, right?
It's just going to get ugly. Yeah.
Right.
Nothing happens.
Nothing at all. Alex, what did you think of last night's game?
Last night's game, I actually saw, because the Tigers are now number one in the MLB power rankings.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, when they were in that really tough stretch, when they were dropping games earlier on in the year, they still were ranked very highly in the power rankings, the official ones. And for me, they don't really have that chip on their shoulder, because at the beginning of the year, people were doubting a little bit. You see the Tigers making some quick moves, acquiring guys left and right. Now it's just routine in the way that this is expected. I think that there's a level of degree where fans and owners and other analysts are just expecting the Tigers to win. So great game, a lot of surprises, but I'm expecting the Tigers to keep
Well, winning. I may argue kind of opposite with you in that regard. Just this simple fact. We all know the Tigers are great in the regular season. I mean, they've been known to rack up wins, and you know they have an unbelievable batting lineup. They have an unbelievable starting pitching rotation. Of course, there's some shaky parts as far as that bullpen goes, like we discussed yesterday. Defense needs to get a little more solid, I think, after watching last night's game and a few other games this season. But overall, we know the Tigers are stacked, arguably the most stacked team in the MLB. They're expected to do well in the regular season. Going into the playoffs, though, we've just seen them just get so close and not get the job done. So that's not what I argue. I mean, they've proven already. Teams out there and fans know the Tigers are a solid team. They're going to be successful. They're a shoo-in for the playoffs. I just say to say the Tigers are going to make the playoffs without a doubt. I think that's a no-brainer. But how deep they go, and can that bullpen come in and solidify games for them when they are down or need to salvage a game? Can they do that? Those are where those question marks still lie, and the fact that they haven't gotten it done these past few years has created a kind of chip on their shoulder to get over that hump. We know you can get there, but can you finish the job? And I think that's where that chip on the shoulder comes for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's World Series or bust.
Right.
I mean, and that's how they've been looking at the last few seasons, because they have gotten so close and fallen short. So I think, you know, they know their legacy is going to be made in the playoffs, but the earlier you can kind of set yourself up to make it, so you can start thinking about the playoffs, the better. And the earlier you can start to iron out some of these issues. And I think the early moves, sometimes they came off as panic, but I think they're just tinkering, because they know they have something. They just need to find the right pieces to get them over the hump. And that's
like
the hardest part.
It's kind of like the Pistons when they got Rashid. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
exactly. Okay, you just need that one extra move to get you over the hump, because, you know, it's very easy to kind of get better. Mm. It's hard to stay at the top level. And I think, you know, they're right there. I mean, they might be one notch below, you know, obviously the champions. But, I mean, they're right there. They're so close to breaking through. It's hard to get that last step, and I think they're just trying to find the right mix of guys. They know they're close. They're hoping Ausmus is the guy at the manager position. You know, they're hoping Martinez can fill in for Fielder. I mean, they're tinkering.
They are.
It's not wholesale changes. They're tinkering because they know they're close. But again, everything's going to be decided in October. Nobody's going to be talking about their hot start in April and May if they lose in the first round of the playoffs.
That's all that matters, man. That's all that matters. I definitely agree. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, it is Joe Louis. Yes, the great Joe, a Detroit sports icon, national sporting icon, if you will. He turns 100 years old today. We're going to talk about the legacy that Joe Louis leaves. 517-355-9527. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, joined by Matt Luckey and Alex Shar. Guys, really quick, we didn't talk about the scuffle, though. I mean, did you guys think that was intentional from Norris? Did you guys see the pitch? I thought it was intentional.
I think it was intentional.
It looked like it was.
Especially after a home run.
Right. I mean, Kinsler smacks a homer, you know, two pitches after that. He throws a 94 miles per hour fastball at his ribs. I thought it was definitely intentional. I think everybody pretty much had that notion. And what I was surprised with, though, that they threw Norris out and not Hunter, because I think they both were jabbing at each other at the same time. And I was like, okay, if anything, just let it kind of cool down and keep them both in the game. I was shocked that they threw Norris out, though. That was Norris' first time he'd been thrown out.
At the same time, Hunter has that respect around the league as being,
I think that's probably what it was.
And I think the umpires know him as
that. Well, Norris has never been thrown out, though. That's
true.
What shocked me.
But just the Torrey Hunter name and him being a veteran in the league, I feel like they're not really looking out for him to kind of rustle any feathers, as Matt sometimes says. So.
Yeah, and he did push it. Hunter did. Because, he was jawing with the dugout after it all happened.
Did you read those lips? Did you guys read those lips at one point? Oh, man. It was clear what he said.
Even middle schoolers could have read his lips. So
Right. It was pretty bad. Okay, we all agree that it was intentional. So, okay. All right, guys. Well, the great Joe Louis, of course. Joe Louis, an icon. It is his 100th. Birthday. Of course, he passed away. Joe Louis passed away back in the 60s. But his impact on the sports world and beyond is certainly still felt today. And we wanted to honor him by just kind of briefly talking about what he has done for the game. Guys, you know, Joe Louis is one of those figures that I'm pretty sure, you know, many of your grandma or grandfather or uncle. I mean, they know what he did in the sports world, and you know, it was kind of crazy, because I remember I was talking to my grandma. My grandma always brings up You know, that time back in the day when he fought Max Schmeling, the rematch, and the hype surrounded around that fight. It was probably the it was better. It's better than pay-per-view, folks. It's better than pay-per-view. I mean, it was a lot of hype in that fight because Schmeling is a guy. After he beat Joe Louis the first time, he became an icon in Germany. And of course, during that time period, it was really, really interesting because that was kind of you know, around the time where the Nazi culture was really, you know, coming to fruition and becoming very popular over there. And of course, we all know the very sad instances that were going on at that time in that area of the country. But they kind of looked at, you know, Schmeling as kind of an icon and proof that their Aryan belief, if you will, if you don't know what that is, it's kind of like the idea that German-bred or Jewish-born individuals are physically superior than anybody, are smarter, are faster, are stronger. And they kind of used Max Schmeling as that example, especially after he knocked off Joe Louis. So there was a lot of social tension, there was a lot of cultural tension, and in that fight, of course, it only lasted about 2 minutes and 34 seconds. Joe Louis comes up, knocks him out. Schmeling only threw 2 punches throughout that entire time in the first round. Knocks him out. Louis instantly born and bred into not just African-American sporting royalty, but sports royalty in general. And it was an unbelievable moment. And I'm pleased to have the pleasure to welcome a man who knows about that fight firsthand and a man who knows a thing or two about boxing. He's won several titles in the Golden Gloves boxing. And at one time was the number one boxer at the 126-pound featherweight division. Back in the day, he was nominated for the All-Army Boxing Team. Again, it's great to have Elmo Hudson join me to talk about the great Joe Louis. How you doing, Elmo?
Great.
Thank you for joining me today. You know, I got to ask you about Joe Louis. Of course, today marking his 100th birthday. How did Joe Louis's popularity take off back in the day, Elmo?
Full speed.
Full speed.
Yeah, he was great. You know, he started out as a light heavyweight.
Right.
And he was successful as a light heavyweight also before he moved into the heavyweight division.
Right, right. Exactly. So can you kind of recall that time period? Did you get a chance to listen to any of his fights back in the day?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, when we moved here from the South, my dad took us to the movies in the Planet Theater on Michigan Avenue. No, the Cap, Washington Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And the Joe Louis fight was on. And my dad took us there to watch him, and we saw him firsthand, you know, in the movie. That was the first time I ever went to a movie in Lansing.
Wow.
Unbelievable. 5 or 6 years old.
So you were 5 or 6 years old. What fight was that? Do you remember?
No, I don't. No, I don't remember which fight it was.
Gotcha. But it's still, you got to see an icon fight. I got to tell you, what were your first impressions of Louis when you first saw him fight?
Well, I thought it was the best, the greatest. You know, I've heard of him, you know, heard my dad mention him and so forth, et cetera. And everybody was talking about Joe Louis, you know, the Brown Bomber, you know, that's all we ever heard. You know, especially in the South, you know, when Louis, you know, from Alabama, Lafayette, Alabama, right, was a sheriff of cotton, you know, worked in the cotton fields and you know, from there probably where he gained his strength. And anyway, when they moved up north to Detroit and began his boxing career, as a friend of his invited him to go down to the gym, and he boxed with him and he knocked him down. And he said, "You need to give up violin lessons and go into boxing." So that's where he started off.
That's where the dream started, in the good old city of Detroit. Gotta love
that's
that.
Right.
Now,
yep.
For you, you know, growing up and watching Joe, Elmo, how did Joe Louis impact your own boxing career?
Well, I wanted to pattern my boxing career after him. You know, all the boxers mostly did, because, you know, he was one of the best, if not the best. I mean, for me, I felt like he was the best. And, I mean, his power, his punches, you know, he did everything right. You know, he was a perfectionist.
Right,
and he was loved, you know, through all the black neighborhoods. They really talked about him, and And he came up in the right time, you know, when it was a segregation. And the blacks needed a champion, a world champion. And the only one they had to look up to was Joe Lohr, the Brown Bomber. And I think he made his statement when he fought Max Mallet in Chicago. And defeated. And then at first, in the first fight, he was defeated.
Right.
But the second fight, he knocked him out in the first round. He knocked him out about three times. And the fourth time, he knocked him out cold.
Right. And we're, because, you know, that's always the moment. Even talking with my late grandfather and my grandmother and my uncles, they always bring up that fight because it was kind of a huge moment in sports due to the social tension, you know, and just the, again, you know, Joe Louis, he had knocked down the great Joe Louis. He became a, Schmeling became a hero in Germany. Joe Louis was kind of looked at as the guy, you know, if he did win, he would become an American icon instantly. A lot of pressure on the back of Joe Louis. Can you just kind of take us back in that moment? Where were you when you listened to or saw that fight?
Well, when that fight came on the radio, it was really significant. Everybody wanted to see that fight, especially the return bout. And, you know, everybody was tuned to their radio. And at that time, the radio wasn't working that well. But everybody, you know, had their radio on to see the Brown Bomber. And the blacks was looking forward to that fight because, to them, that was liberation for them. You know, because he was a symbol for all blacks. And he broke down, really, the color barrier. You know, he made a way for other blacks to follow in his footsteps. Like, you know, Jackie Robinson, for instance, you know, that made it easy for him to come in. And so when he knocked out Max Mellon in Chicago, I mean, they had a parade. I mean, they were parading up and down the streets of blacks. They were playing music and dancing. And, I mean, it just was a great time, you know.
Wow.
And that's something that in the world will never forget, you know. He did something no other black had ever been able to do, you know, because of segregation.
Boy, I always say, if I had a time machine, that fight is one of the moments I would want to go back and witness firsthand.
Yes, that's for sure. Yeah, that was a great moment in history. You know, I mean, it made history, and he got I guess he enlisted into the service in the U.S. Army.
Right.
And he did a lot of charitable work there, and he gave a lot of money away to enlisted charity. For Army personnel, you know, veterans and so forth.
Right.
And, I mean, he had a great heart, you know.
He definitely
had a great heart, but he did what he had to do because he was a boxer, and he put his whole life, his whole heart into what he done, and he trained faithfully all the way until the end, you know. So he's
yes.
an icon, you know.
Yes, he is.
Shouldn't be forgotten, and he came from Detroit, the Motor City. That's great.
Gotta love that. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are celebrating the 100th birthday of the great Joe Louis by talking with Golden Glove great Elmo Hudson. Now, Elmo, you know, you talk about the African-American impact on that Joe Louis had on that particular race. Back in those times, how important was it for an African-American sports figure to integrate into modern society the way he was able to?
Well, I think, you know, the way he integrated into our modern society was, you know, it, the time was right for it. You know, the time was right for a black American, such as his statue, to do what he accomplished. And it broke down the color barrier in many areas. And as a result of it, I mean, he had a lot to do with the 1964 Civil Rights Act being passed. You know, because of what he did, what he broke down the barrier had already been broken by him. And all they did was follow in his footsteps, you know, to bring it to fruition. So that was great.
Yes, yes.
Great.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, before I let you go, Elmo, we only got about 5 minutes left. Where does he rank in your top boxing list of all time? Is he one? Is he two, three? Where would you put him?
I'll put him as number one.
Number one.
Number one. Because, I mean, he opened the door for African-Americans to get an opportunity to be a great athlete, to be somebody in the sports world. And as a result of it, many African-Americans have infiltrated into the boxing field, boxing profession. And as a result, they've been able to have a level of quality of life that most African Americans could never live, you know, because of the fact of their stature. And it's one of the greatest sports in history and it's still flourishing. And a lot of blacks, especially in the ghettos and places like that, they have an opportunity to fight themselves out of the ghettos through boxing and really make something out of themselves. And that opened the doors for many other opportunities in different fields of life.
Right. So, yeah, that's so true. Gotta love that. Hey, Elmo, thanks so much for taking your time out today to talk about the icon that is Joe Louis. Really appreciate it, Elmo. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
No problem. We'll be in touch. Again, Elmo Hudson, he is great. I tell you what, he's done a lot in the world of boxing, you know, locally, and it was a great firsthand account of just the impact that Joe Louis had. Alex and Matt, to close out our show, I mean, when you look back at Joe Louis, what do you guys think about and what do you think his legacy is?
He was just very well-disciplined and diverse. I mean, the first African-American to play on a PGA Tour event, looking at what he left with the Red Wings and Joe Louis Arena, not only is it where the Red Wings play, they've hosted concerts, they've hosted the Republican National Convention where Ronald Reagan was nominated. He was just so well-disciplined in many different areas on and off the ring. So for me, that's what I remember most is that he's not just a boxer. He's way more than that.
Yeah, he's bigger than that, man.
He is more than that, and he kind of transcended being the first, you know, major black athlete to
right.
being the first major athlete who happened to be black.
Right.
You know, like, because when he started out, he had nicknames like, geez, the Brown Bomber,
yep.
the Mahogany Mauler,
yep.
the Chocolate Chopper. I mean, I sound like I'm reading Donald Sterling's personal roster for the Clippers or something.
Exactly.
But,
I know, right?
But then, you know, he does these events for the military, and those names kind of fade away. And he's Joe Louis. He's a legend. And it didn't matter that he was black. It's just amazing that he was able to kind of transcend that. And, you know, the fight with Schmeling, you kind of think, you look at it and you think, wow, that's a movie. You know, you have all these social issues, and then you remember Rocky IV basically is that story, but with Rocky and the Russians in the Cold War. It's just amazing you know, his story has kind of been retold through popular culture,
mm-hmm.
and people don't really know that much about him because it was so long ago. It's interesting to take a look back. I'm glad we did it because mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff, I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't either. And a lot of people don't know that. Was it Rocky IV?
Rocky IV.
Rocky IV, that's when he fought Drago. And, that was based off that story. I didn't know that until years and years after. But, yeah, I mean, Joe Louis, a sports icon. We will never forget him. Thanks a lot to Elmo Hudson for coming on with us and sharing his thoughts and kind of taking us back in time to remember the man that was the icon, Joe Louis. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Current Sports TV tapes tomorrow night. I'll be sitting down with Ryan DeLeon, MMA and boxing fight promoter. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic Tuesday, and be easy, people.